Welcome to On the Brink Radio. This is broadcast number 301, being recorded from beautiful Apollo Bay, Victoria. It's the 7th of November, 2019. I'm sitting here in my little room. The wind is howling outside. The rain is blowing. It's quite chilly. It's quite like an inclement winter day on the North Island of New Zealand back in July. But it's almost the middle of November here and well into spring. And it's quite beautiful. Normally I'd be recording this show sitting out on top of the sand dune little overlook at the Barn River where I saw my beautiful Michaelmas daisies a couple weeks ago. But due to the weather happening outside, I'm recording this in my room. I'd like to thank Sherlock Holmes for taking the time to communicate with me 2 or 3 weeks ago. That was a very interesting exchange, and I look forward to sharing more with him. We're going to try to do a joint session with John Drake, Ilya Kuryak, and David Vincent, Clarice Starling, Fox Mulder, and Dana Scully, along with Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, to try to do a little more in-depth investigative sleuthing concerning not only the whole quote-unquote climate change scenario, but an even bigger picture involving the whole situation of which humanity finds itself now on Mother Earth. But this show actually relates to that. This show relates three of my favorite and most recently covered areas of research and discussion. The whales and dolphins, the whole concept of what's popularly referred to as extraterrestrial intelligence, and what I call the Inky window, that's E-N-C-K-E, one of two windows of time that each year, late June, early July, and late October, early November, during which the Earth passes through the debris clouds that are left over from the fragmentation or disintegration of the once supercomet Inky, whose larger fragments are believed to have been involved in some of the major cataclysmic impact events that the Earth has experienced. Possibly the Tunguska explosion in Siberia in 1908. Possibly the Chicxulub impact of 65 million years ago. Possibly the another crater in Siberia that starts with the letter P that was about 30 million years ago. These comets have been around for a long time. The whales and dolphins have always been my heroes on this planet ever since I grew up in North Carolina within about an hour and a half drive of what was at that time the home of the largest number of dolphins in captivity in the whole world. There was 27 dolphins in captivity there at a place called Quinlan Marine Attractions. And these dolphins had been there pretty much probably my whole life. And I never knew about it until I read Dr. John Lilly's book, Communication Between Man and Dolphin, that had an in-depth bibliography including the locations of all the whales and dolphins known to be in captivity. And so, as soon as I learned that, I actually tried to set up a way to go and meet dolphins for the very first time there. And I did. I asked this guy if I could come and mow his lawn as a way of meeting these dolphins. And so I did. And I mowed his lawn and he paid me. And I got to go in and meet this mother dolphin and her little baby that were in this, it was a building kind of like a garage, like a big metal kind of shed, but it had a big swimming pool in there, and it was pretty dark. There's no windows. And these two dolphins were in there, and I just instantly felt their presence as soon as I walked through the door. And I could hear them breathing, and when they would exhale. And I went, and the mother dolphin didn't come right over to me, but the little baby did. And it was like a young girl. She was just so, it was obviously a female, and she just came over, and I stroked her belly and touched her and stuff, and it was just a very amazing encounter. This was in 1981. I was 25 years old. And ever since then, I've just thought of the whales and dolphins as a whole, which really includes 80 or 90 different species, as opposed to us. All humans are only one species. But they're my favorite beings on this whole planet. But along with everybody else who are the equally important members of our family of life, all equally loved and nurtured and cared for by Mother Earth. But the whales and dolphins are special beings in that we necessarily sort of define our whole reality in terms of anthropocentric projection. I mean, in a way, it would be close to impossible not to do this, because we are seeing, hearing, conceptualizing, and experiencing everything from the perspective and through the lens of being humans, which is only one species of life. And even though we might be living on the same planet, in the same biosphere, the same ecological environments as all the other life forms, our way of experiencing this would be necessarily similar to, but different from, that of all other species. So, just in the same way that it's practically impossible to know what another person's experience of reality is like, it's even another order of magnitude further removed to try to understand or grasp what another species' experience of reality might be like, even though you might be standing side by side and some of the same photons might be hitting you from the sun, and some of the same sound waves of the ocean might be crashing on you, and some of the same smells and some other familiar objects or beings close by. But we don't know what it's like to see or hear anything through someone else's eyes or ears. So the whales and dolphins, according to modern science, have been living on the Earth approximately 30 million years and pretty much in the form they're at right now. That's a long, 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 long time before we even... We don't really know what we were before. We think we were like sort of ape-like things that came down from the trees, like tarsiers or, you know, I mean, but who really knows? We might have been Sasquatches from Andromeda. We might have been the Nephilim. We might have been the Anunnaki. We might even have evolved from the Coolasuchus, which is a giant prehistoric Antarctic salamander that was believed to have eaten dinosaurs for its lunch. I've just become a big fan of Coolasuchus here in Apollo Bay because they found some of their fossils close to here, and so I've started painting them Coolasuchus. They're quite cool. They've got a big triangular head, about 4 to 5 meters long. Being salamanders, they could tolerate colder temperatures than reptiles. We may have descended from or evolved from anything. Carrots. We just don't know. But here we are. Science believes the whales and dolphins have been in their present form for about 30 million years. Us, a lot less than a million. And so, given that it's a... there's no firm boundary or line of demarcation between, like, who was our predecessor. Again, you know, the sort of... that kind of thing, it's kind of an artifact of our perception of time, in the same way that climatological eras and geological time, it's like we're deriving a model of time based on the simultaneous existence now of remnants, like layers of elements or minerals or fossils, that's all here now. but it came to be gradually, layer by layer. So we're looking down through all these layers and then deducing, creating these models of reality based on very old substances that are here now, trying to determine what happened millions or billions of years ago from looking at this, even though we weren't there. So it's highly abstract, an extraordinarily abstract endeavor to create the models that we are and to give these models as much credence as we do. But I guess it's the best we can do, because other than that, what do we have? So one of the things that we have, for maybe not going back billions of years, but millions, is this thing called memory. We have memory. Memory is one of our most central cognitive functions that enables us to exist in a mental way. Because imagine if we had all the cognitive and neurophysiological sensation and perception abilities that we do, but no memory. It would be kind of like a live video camera showing everything to someone, you, but just constantly in real time with no record or perception of what came before, even 1 second before, much less 10 minutes or an hour or a day or a week or a month or a year, or even more abstractly, in lifetimes of people that existed before you. So we have memory, and we believe that all animals have memory of some kind, and probably even plants. Probably all life forms has memory in some way, depending on how we want to define it. It's the retention of information based on events or encounters or experiences that happened that might modify, I mean, this is a behavioralistic approach, of course, this information might modify or influence a decision based on a future similar situation, based on the retention of information relating to a similar situation from before. It's probably the best I can do to create a generalized scientific definition of what memory is. But memory is if you recognize somebody's face, or you've seen that painting before, or you know that's the song of a bird that you've heard before. But if we didn't have memory, everything would just be as if it was brand new. And so we wouldn't have a sense of identity of who we are, because you wouldn't remember. You'd just be a constant. They say that's what a newborn baby's experience like. It doesn't have any memory, at least not of this lifetime. So very, very interesting thing to think about. But so the whales and dolphins, we believe, have been here 30 million years with neurophysiological capabilities, hard and software, similar to and even in advance of ours. And that would only be a given, since they've been here for so much longer than us. They would have evolved to be in more perfect balance, more perfect harmony, a greater level of adaptation to their environment. This is all scientific talk. They would be a lot more perfectly in tune. They would have been able to take everything that it means to them to be here to the next level. And also in what they don't do and haven't done. And in this same way, I compare them to true indigenous people, of whom the indigenous people of Australia are my very favorites, the ones probably that I'm most familiar with as well. But I call the whales and dolphins the ultimate indigenous people, because to me, traditionally, before the Europeans came, the indigenous people of Australia as a whole, and probably a lot of other indigenous people on different continents too, but they lived in a way that was very close to nature, that was materially very simple, totally non-technological. They didn't even use metal. They used wood and stone. for implements and stuff, but they might have built some little structures here and there and did a lot of, you know, landscaping and kind of gardening kind of things and stuff like that. But I think the true measure of their success as truly intelligent beings was what they didn't do. They didn't create civilization. They didn't terraform. They didn't create cities and mining and all the destructive things that what we call civilization is based on. They had extraordinarily complex social systems and philosophical and cosmological worldviews and schools of thought and models of reality and forms of expression, just as beautiful and sacred and real and comprehensive and in-depth as any cosmology of any culture, including the Bible, which really just represents the worldview of one tiny little group of displaced people from the Middle East. And so when we think of how many indigenous cultures have gone totally extinct, especially when the last surviving member who knows the language passes away, a whole big piece of the worldview puzzle of humanity is gone. Well, the whales and dolphins have been doing this all along, and even though we have had some of their species to go extinct, there's still a very high degree of continuity with their species' existence. And like with the orcas, who my friend Howard Garrett made clear that even though biologically they're all the same, there's two distinct cultural groups of the orca, the majority of whom only eat salmon. No matter how hungry they are, they'll only eat salmon or maybe another fish. But the minority ones, which are kind of the rogues, they're sort of more adventitious. They're the ones that probably help them get the name the killer whale, because they'll go and eat a seal, they'll eat other cetaceans, they'll eat the young of baby humpback whales or dolphins. I don't know if there's any actual recorded evidence of them attacking or eating a person, or a member of their own species. I don't know about that. But that's something that the humans have long been known to do. So there are cultural groupings within species of cetaceans, and probably other animals too, if we really had time to look into it. But the point is that not only are the whales and dolphins, as I understand it, the ultimate indigenous people, they're also a true extraterrestrial intelligence. Terrestrial meaning relating to the earth, but also to land. So extraterrestrial, and I must thank Dr. John Lilly for pointing this out, extraterrestrial would mean, we usually take it to mean not from the earth, like from another planet or outside the solar system, another star system, extragalactic beings from space. But extraterrestrial in its more fundamental meaning can just mean away from land. So beings that live in the ocean would be extraterrestrial, in the same way that beings that always lived in the air, like, for example, an albatross that can fly for 2 years without touching the earth, that he would be extraterrestrial being during that time, or essentially extraterrestrial if he almost never needed to touch land. Probably have to lay his egg somewhere. But this is my view of the whales and dolphins. They're a highly evolved family of beings of many different species that have a lot in common, but it's a much greater diversity among the 80 or 90 species of cetaceans than it is among the one species of humanity. Yet we still, even myself included, we're still sort of trapped in looking at them in terms of this generalized grouping, which is just far too complex to try to start breaking down. If I was going to have this conversation and talk about every different species of whale and dolphin individually, so what I'm doing is generalizing based on my own knowledge and awareness to make a point about their true intelligence the intelligence of indigenous people, which I liken the indigenous people of Mother Earth, their relationship with the earth and nature has been symbiotic, which means living together in harmony, or even in a relationship of where one needs the other in order to live and function healthfully and properly. Symbiosis. But opposed to symbiosis is what you'd call parasitism, where one life form lives on another, but to the detriment of its host. It's like sucking its blood or eating its food or eating part of its body from the inside out or using its body to lay eggs or consuming it for this and that. And I truly think that that's a really good way to characterize the difference between indigenous and civilized ways of life, is that indigenous living in its true form is symbiotic, and civilized living, as expressed fully in the world of today, is completely parasitic and ultimately seems to be aimed at a very high probability of destroying its host, which is Mother Earth. And because living beings have a very strong tendency to want to survive and to stay healthy, very powerful healing mechanisms, that's why I feel pretty sure that Mother Earth is going to throw off everything that we're doing. In my comprehensive article I wrote about whales and dolphins back in 2012, it's called "We Are Not Alone Yet: How We Are Waging War on a True Extraterrestrial Intelligence." And the opening paragraph of that, I talk about how humanity's been living under this delusion that we think we're alone. We think we're the only species of life, the only beings on this planet that has intelligence, that has any kind of awareness of what's going on, that we have self-awareness, that we've elevated ourselves to this pinnacle of grandeur. I call it megalomaniacal, in a way. And I don't think that that's an exaggeration. But we aren't alone. Only someone that's got third-order dementia could look around at all the fellow life forms, plants and animals and amoebas and diatoms and Kulosuchia fossils and everybody, and think that we're alone or ever have been. How insane. And even if humans are the only thing that existed, how can we possibly be alone in a world with over 7 billion other human beings? You know, so that's like, we're alone. That's just as much of a fictional delusion as living forever or ruling the world. These are sort of these generalized memes that people get stuck on. But I think that the whales and dolphins have been very aware of events and processes happening in the solar system and in the heliocosm for the entirety of time that they've been here, possibly in ways that are culturally transmitted among them, but also in real time modes of direct sensory perception that involve means of information transfer that are totally beyond or unknown to us. And one of these things revolves around the fact that they live their lives entirely immersed in water, except when they jump out of the air or they go on the beach or something. They're in water. And so water is this extraordinarily unique and important substance. Has a unique bonding angle unlike any other molecule, and it gives water molecules the property of liquidity because of the bonding, but also the fact that this bonding enables any contiguous body of water to function as one macromolecule. So any little lake, any drop of water, any river, any ocean, any tarn, any pond, any body of water is really acting like one giant molecule, so it's fully coherent and integrated. So any body of water has molecular properties. And when you think about the entire ocean of Mother Earth, and how big that is, and its shape and its cubic volume. That's a lot of water. That's kind of like, basically like a shell. A shell of water around a solid core of a planet, but it's permeated all down through, and it's expressed on the surface as atmosphere and water vapor, but it's also dispersed through the bodies of every living thing, which probably doesn't constitute that great of a percentage of the mass of the planet, but in terms of the more biologically active living crustal element of the planet, that would be a large, that's where life is and kind of what it is. So the whales and dolphins are extraordinarily evolved mammals with neurophysiological heart and software similar to yet more evolved than ours, but that have been living in water for millions of years, yet they still are able to see very well at visual wavelengths, but their primary sense is sound and hearing. So my hypothesis is that the whales and dolphins have been able to develop ways of sensing and perceiving things that are happening in the solar system, and for example in the sun or in Jupiter or maybe in neighboring stars. And so I think that the planetary ocean acts as a sort of antenna, a planetary level molecular antenna made of water that enables them to dial into sensing the vibrations through some sort of harmonic resonance modes that enables them to detect and isolate and interpret things that are happening within the solar system and in neighboring solar systems, neighboring star systems. And particularly in this solar system, they can probably detect or have information about all the different bodies passing through the solar system or orbiting, you know, like the planets and their moons, but also all the comets and asteroids as they come through. And so my guess is that they have a huge cognitive model of the solar system that exists in their minds, and it exists in sort of the Akashic record of the cetacean mind that's maintained over the millennia. It's sort of like distributed in the cloud of cetacean consciousness. So it's not really, it doesn't exist alone in any individual cetacean's mind, but holographically it's in all of their minds. And I think this also describes a way that our own memory and reality works, but I think that we're so blocked off from our true cognitive and psychological capabilities that we only get little glimpses and memories of this kind of thing, or when we're in an altered state, like on a big dose of acid or a near-death experience or something like that, we get glimpses of, and then maybe through long years of intensive meditation and internal self-mastery, we might arrive at a higher level of returning to these innate abilities and awarenesses that we always have, but we'd still be limited by the species that we're a member of, whereas the whales and dolphins would only be limited by their own biological limitations, which are far greater than ours. So they have two things going for them that we've lost. They're much more evolved than us in that they've been here a lot longer than we have, and they also haven't fallen off their path and started living in ways that have been destructive to their own well-being and that of their planet and their fellow life forms. So we've got all that going against us, and that's a big reason why we can't really be classified as people anymore in terms of our basic behavior, not in terms of what it's meant to be a person for most of the time that we've existed. So my hypothesis is that the whales and dolphins are a true extraterrestrial intelligence and the ultimate indigenous people who have extraordinarily advanced knowledge and awareness, both culturally transmitted over time and in terms of real-time direct sensory awareness and perception of cosmic events happening within and near the solar system and the heliocosm, and that they know about things that have happened before, particularly cataclysmic and catastrophic events that have affected all of life on Earth, like comet and asteroid impacts, but also that they know things that are going to happen. Not necessarily that they're clairvoyant or psychic, but that they can sense it coming. It's like if you're able to look way down at the end of a highway, if you've got extremely acute vision, you might see a vehicle coming down the road that would be invisible to somebody whose vision wasn't as good as you. So in the same way, the whales and dolphins, with more acute senses of the same versions that we have, but probably other types of sensation and perceptions that we don't even have, or possibly synergetic, synesthetic combinations of perceptual coherence that we haven't achieved, they're able to have knowledge about things that are going to happen. This leads me to tell about how 2 days ago, on the 5th of November in 2015, 4 years ago, I had been very privileged to be swimming with a pod of dolphins on Great Barrier Island, or Aotea, in New Zealand, almost every day for a week. They had been there almost every day for a week, and I was going out there and I'd get in the water, and most days I'd have my cameras. And so on this particular day, I had my still and video camera. So I was in water maybe up to my waist, not any deeper than that, because my cameras aren't waterproof. And I was filming them doing these really amazing maneuvers where they weren't surfing on a wave. They were shooting down through it sideways, but at like lightning speed. Unbelievable how fast it was, just for a couple of seconds. So I was filming them doing this, and I go like, "Jeff, you better get out and go and paint," because I'd been doing that for a couple hours. And I went, and this is, I was, you just feel, you become very tight with them psychically. You're just kind of in dolphin consciousness mode. And I went back and sat down at my art table, and all of a sudden, wham, this image appeared in my mind. And I'm a very visual person, and I'm used to flashes of insight and images appearing in my mind and things like that. But this one was qualitatively and quantitatively different from any image I'd ever had appear in my mind. And I somehow intuitively knew that it was from the dolphins. The dolphins transmitted this image to me. And people might go, yeah, how do you know that? I go, but look, if you start reading up on people that have worked with whales and dolphins a lot, like trainers especially, they'll all tell you that they can read your mind, that they're known to be very telepathic beings. And also, a well-known whale and dolphin person from New Zealand named Frank Robson also wrote about their telepathic abilities. That's something I need to look into a bit more. So the dolphins transmitted an image to me, and what was important about it is not even just that it was from them, because you'd think if beings can transmit an image, they could have sent anything. They could have sent an image of an octopus or a fish or a piece of seaweed or a fish hook or a propeller or anything, depending on what they wanted, what their motive in communicating was. But what it was, I instantly knew what it was, and that's what blew me away, and I instantly drew a picture of it right from my mind's eye. And what it was an impression, a visual, maybe a retinal imprint or image of what a comet or asteroid might look like for the split second when it's passing through the Earth's atmosphere on a trajectory directly towards the person that's looking at it, me, or the whales and dolphins. So anyway, like when you see a meteor, you see it streaking across the sky, it leaves a tail. And when you see a comet, like we don't really see it. You can see its motion from night to night, but you don't see it actually moving across the sky. It's kind of like the hands in a clock. But if it was entering the atmosphere, it would be going at a much steeper angle. It would be a lot closer. And if it was headed towards a point very close to where you were, it would be moving extraordinarily fast. And Bill Bryson has a great portion of a chapter in his book, A Brief History of Nearly Everything, where he describes this whole scenario. But if it was coming straight towards where you are, it would be blindingly bright like a star or like an arc weld flame, surrounded probably by a halo of incandescent colors, maybe some streamers and possibly even bolts of lightning or something coming out. And then what came after that? Well, it just depends on what actually happened. If probably any whales or dolphins that were really close to where it impacted would have been vaporized like everything else, but there was probably ones that were within a certain radius of that who saw that basic image but who weren't killed. And it was their memory, and also the memory that was being transmitted into the cetacean Akashic record cognitive memory model, even the ones that were killed would have been transmitting their visual information into that cloud as up until the moment when they were killed. So that's why all this information is there. And when you think about it, theoretically, all information that any being has ever experienced would be available in this sort of multi-dimensional Akashic multi-species record. Were we able to access it, or if there was a reason to, or we were allowed to, or enabled. It's one of those things that I just don't think people are ready to have that kind of access to that kind of information base, because we would try to exploit it. So anyway, I received that image and I drew it down, and it instantly blew me away because there was two components of the image that seemed equally important. One was that the whales and dolphins, not the whales and dolphins of then, but their ancestors had witnessed this event at least once and possibly more than once, and lived to tell their species wasn't extincted. So the ancestors of today are here, and they know about it. They know that this has happened before, and all the implications for the earth and life forms and the oceans and the atmosphere and everything. They know all this, but also, they were also telling me, or implicit in this transmission, was that something like this is getting ready to happen again soon. Now that's huge, and there wasn't any kind of definite time frame with it. But that's what has constantly blown me away ever since. Because I think that they can know, they have ways of sensing, they can see, they can feel, they can hear that this object or objects is out there on a course to impact us. And as time goes by, their knowledge might be being refined as things change and it gets closer and it lines up, and they may be constantly or periodically transmitting more information to people like myself that are attuned and that are actually listening for what it is that they're trying to share. So I'm constantly trying to pick up on any sort of modifications or any new information they have relating to this kind of thing. And I try to express it through my art. And I try to learn about comets and asteroids as much as I can, especially the work of Victor Klub and Bill Napier. And I've learned about Comet Encke and how we're in, right now, we're in the second of two Encke windows that happens each year. But another piece of information that was implicit in this message, this image from the whales and dolphins, was that it occurred within the Encke window on November 5th, 2015. So if that meant that one of these impacts that they were describing happened at that time, that would make perfect sense. So this is all just this sort of very big picture hypothesis that I'm organizing in my mind and trying to share. But I think that we don't really need to look outside the Earth and our immediate family of life for an extraterrestrial intelligence to encounter, because they're here. They've been here longer than us. It's the whales and dolphins. And in a more general sense, any life form living in the ocean would be an extraterrestrial intelligence too, in that every life form has its own intelligence. But, you know, I could devote a whole show to talking about what that word actually means. And it's pretty big in the world today in two different ways. We've got the whole thing of AI, artificial intelligence, and we've got the thing of ETI, extraterrestrial intelligence. And we've also got SETI, S-E-T-I, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, which was or is an ongoing technologically based survey of the heavens for specific kind of artifacts of technological civilization. But like, I think his name was Philip Morrison, the scientist. No, Richard Feynman. Anyway, I forgot his name, but he was talking about how whatever we detect, it's not going to be the quote-unquote alien beings themselves. It's going to be their technology, their artifacts. It would be like beings on Jupiter meeting one of our space probes and thinking that that was us. So that's the kind of scenario. We are not alone, and we never have been. Except maybe in the sense of our own, the delusional pinnacle of species superiority that we've placed ourselves on, the megalomaniacal pinnacle of superiority. We might be alone in that. We're alone as a species in that we're the only ones that aren't true to ourselves. We're the only ones that have become a threat to every other living thing on the planet. So in a way, we are alone. We've isolated ourselves in our own mentality. But it's only because we've gone to great lengths to construct what I'm calling a psychic firewall that blocks us out from hearing the voices of nature, the voices of our fellow beings, even the warnings and admonitions from elders of members of our same species of indigenous people over the past hundreds of years, warning us about the path that we're on. Not to mention the voices, the cries and the songs and the sounds of all of our fellow beings. So from here within this second inky window of 2019, I'd like to thank everybody for being out there and for reading my blogs and listening to my show. And I'd really like to send my love to Aotea, Great Barrier Island, which I call a sacred place of guidance from whales and dolphins, because it's been there that I've had my most intensive encounters with dolphins repeatedly, where Lisbon and I swam with three dolphins in 2009 and came away with not only a sense of exhilaration, but a sense that they were warning us about some kind of impending planetary level catastrophe. And then at that exact same location, 6 years later, when I was swimming with these dolphins, some of whom might have been some of those exact same dolphins that were there with us that day, getting that image transmitted to me. And so I'm thinking that there may be, sometime in the near future, there could be a third communication encounter of some kind that might have the next level of information about all this, especially if I'm really open to it and actively seeking what it might be. If I've got a greater coherence of my own neuropsychological capabilities, a clearer channel to hear and respond to their information. But I'm constantly refining my abilities to do all that. We have a lot to be thankful for, but we must also all be aware of the part that each of us is playing as a member of the only species that is actively waging war against life on Mother Earth. And one of the best things we can do is to stop being in denial of stuff we don't want to know about and actually open our hearts and minds to understanding the true impacts that our convenient ways of life and the existence of the planetary, military, industrial civilization that we all support implicitly and explicitly. And try to be on our highest path to understand what it really means to be here now as a fellow passenger crew member of Spaceship Earth. The whales and dolphins are beaming us constantly with their love and their awareness. I can hear the sound of the waves right now. This is Jeff Phillips Wyferson signing off for On the Brink Radio. Live simply so that others may simply live. Walk in beauty on a path with a grateful heart that can be a magnet for miracles. Hey Wahi Tapu, Wahi Barahi Mai, Inya Tahora Inya Aihi. Good day.
Boom.